Coming up on the podcast, why I look toothless at Wigan. You, the listener, had your say. It's cup final week, so can Warrington win at Wembley? Rimmer's looking for money, but it's not quite the Catalan Dragons he turns to for investment. We track down Blake Austin's ankle over there in the Balearics. Daniel from You've Got a Loose Wire picks Saints apart. There's tackle bags, Callum's back, and there's a few nostalgic sound bites to throw in the mix. It's all coming up on What Would Brian Bevan Say? Hello, I'm Rob London, and I'm 10,000 miles away from Wembley. So for me, I'll be watching the match from the settee in my piss-stained pyjamas. But a mighty fine gentleman who'll be there on the day in his new immaculate What Would Brian Bevan t-shirt, no doubt in a stadium section that smells of opulence and oozes the hierarchy he deserves. It's Sam Sankey!
Hello, yes, good morning. And yes, I'm off to Wembley next week, but even the new Wembley is like a tumble-down end terrace in Barrow compared to where I was yesterday.
Yeah, you went to Lord's yesterday, Sam, and I hear you spent a bit of money as well, mate.
Yeah, we're at the home of cricket, padded seats, stewards wearing bow ties and jackets, there's take VIP tent, hampers for lunch, and of course it pissed down. So that was 150 quid well spent. Or not, if you get a free ticket.
How many overs did you see?
About 26, I think it was.
I batted for more than 26 overs against Padgate High School once when I got 26 not out. Were you playing in that game, Dennis, by any chance?
No. Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
Well, not forgetting to, making his way from Somerset to the capital with his tackle bags tucked away in his What Would Brian Bevan Say boxer shorts as they clammily clapped together at Clapham Junction. Didn't think I was going to get that out. Before his takes to his restricted seat, it's Dennis Waywell.
G'day, mate. It's wonderful to be here. And I've got a new voice on here. Very sunny, about 44 degrees. Mm. Is that right?
Tension on the beach and in the water.
Yep.
All those things.
I don't think I can keep that going.
No. It has been quite sunny here, though, today. We've been up to about 25 today. I know you're getting a little bit annoyed with me when I keep sending these pictures of blue skies, Dennis, but looks like you've got a bit of sun down there in Glastonbury as well.
Yeah, sun's always shiny down here. It's lovely. I had a good joke this week, and I've turned it into a rugby league joke. So I was thinking about Luther Burrell, and like he played the other week, and he's been dropped since. And I was wondering if he has been dropped because he's obviously got a rugby union background and they're used to Latin phrases. So when the coaching staff held two fingers up on the pitch to take the 2 points, I think he misinterpreted it and thought it was like push on for a try, union 5 points. So, yeah, how's about that?
When's the joke coming?
That is the joke. It's Latin. Not... two fingers, five. Bit too eyebrow, isn't it?
Oh dear. The replay was the first since 1910, and this was truly a spectacular affair. Different eyewitnesses all have different experiences. Some could see everything, some could see nothing, some could see a bit. But most feel sure that there were a lot more spectators than the 102,569 recorded. The players had to push down through the fans, drawn from all over Lancashire and Yorkshire, into the Odsall Bowl, and were faced by a breathtaking blanket of heads. It was the biggest post-war football crowd of any code seen since the war, a record which still stands. The terraces were made from pressed-down ashes and railway sleepers, which some eager fans have dug up and piled on top of each other to give them a better view to see Challoner score the first try of the match. It's a miracle there wasn't a major disaster, especially since the fans moved around looking for a better position, regardless of the number of people in the stadium. In the second half, Halifax seemed to be applying pressure, but they had to settle for 4 points from two Griffiths penalty goals. Soon after, Jerry Helm went over in the corner to take the Challenge Cup trophy for the second time in 4 years. Oh, how he rejoiced. In a matter of only 3 days, the two captains were facing each other again over the toss of a coin in the championship final. The powerful Warrington side were victorious again. The Warrington folk eagerly lined the streets for the return of the Primrose and Blue heroes, led by the one and only Brian Bevan.
Right, come on then. Let's be positive about this, lads. I'm going to read out the team. I want positivity all the way through the pod this week. We're going to Wembley on Saturday. Here we go. Warrington, Ratchford, Mamo, shit. King, Goodwin. May as well be Godwin.
God.
Lynham.
Hatton.
Hill, Clark, Cooper, Curry, Levette, Akawala, interchange bench was Ben Murdoch-Missilla, Jason Clark, Philbin, and Ben Westwood. Final score was Wigan 20, Wyre 6. Anyone got anything positive to say, lads? Anything at all? Come on, hit me with your positivity.
We won the second half. We won the second half.
We scored more than them second half.
Yeah, we were good in the second half, weren't we? God, we were good. God, we were a good team. Anything else?
I've got two positives.
Come on, Sam. Let's hear them.
The first half, Ben Curry chased back Bevan French and knocked the ball out. You know, stopped him scoring and stopped it being 24-0. And in the second half, even though he still failed to score, Dec Patton took the line on and actually nearly scored twice.
Yeah, well, I've got a theory about this. The first one, that he should have clearly just held the ball in both hands and he would have just put it over the line very easily. I think he thought he was banging the drum in the dressing room. He wanted that other hand free for the stick. I think that's what it was. He got all excited by that. Second one was a try, though, boys, wasn't it? Second one was a try.
I know we don't always agree with Sky, but every one of them who was an ex-player all said, yes, that's a try. So there's clearly a difference between what players think and what match officials think.
Okay, right. Now, come on, who were the good players? I mean, I think Clark had a good game. He must be getting to the point now, Dennis, where he just thinks, well, I'm bothering doing this. I mean, he gets knocked around like a rag doll there in the middle of the field, but boy, he doesn't half try.
I was trying to look at his face in the second half and he was like, you know, he was really trying every time. I think he was the one who was like pushing us on around the rut, looking for like, you know, people behind him and things. And I think you could see it in his face that I think he was pretty immune to the fact that they weren't playing particularly well. And he was just giving 100%. I think on top of that, you had Philbin running like a man possessed.
Standout
player. So
you see how positive we are, which is really good. Hey, has anyone pointed out we won the second half?
What was the score in the second half?
6-2.
Patton kicked it from the touchline. I'm not quite sure what he did. He mishit it, didn't he? And it just kind of creeped over the bar. But good conversion.
Yeah. Okay.
Philbin played well. I thought Philbin had a really good game. And Clark also in the middle there. He didn't stop, did he? He was always trying, Dennis. Yeah. I always thought he was trying all
the
time.
Absolutely. Yeah. He was just pushing us on all the time. And backed up with Philbin. What a pair.
Well, you know what I thought? Because those two played so well, we won the second half. Yes, come on, we won the second half. Excellent. Get in there.
That's good.
So,
what about the negative?
Well, they were down to 12 men. We still couldn't score. Sam, we've said this now for a few weeks. We keep predicting our score has been too high. There's just nothing happening, is there? Absolutely nothing at all.
No, and I think when I've looked back over the start of the season, I think there wasn't a lot happening then, really, in retrospect, apart from a couple of games and apart from, obviously, Austin. But we made fewer mistakes in that first half of the season and therefore scored tries by weight of possession and by the opposition being tired. But in the last 3 or 4 weeks, we're just not completing our sets. We're turning the ball over and we've not got enough creativity at the minute to score tries unless we're camped on their line.
Dennis, do you agree?
Stat boy here. I've just managed to have a look at the average points we've scored. Going back to that point, we've scored an average of 11 points in our last 5 games. And I think most of our predictions have probably averaged us at around about 25.
Yeah.
So...
But Dennis, how many points did we score in the second half yesterday?
We got We won 6-2 in the second half.
We won the second half. Come on, just before Wembley.
Bit below our average. Would have been happier if it was 11-2. But, you know, we can't be too critical.
So basically, Sam, we've got two wingers that are good wingers that could easily fit into the Wigan team, or they could fit into the St Helens team, and they wouldn't look, you know, out of place if it was Charnley or Lynham. But we've got two centres that just run straight lines. Neither of them are ball-playing centres. I know King flipped a ball out at Catalans the other week, but neither of them can draw a man. They're both direct runners. We've got no loose forward who can throw a ball around and distribute left or right. And we've got probably the worst halfback bearing in Super League yesterday.
Well, certainly the slowest.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's a positive. We are the best at being slow at numbers 6 and 7.
Who'd have thought at the start of this season, with all our money, we'd end up with the worst halfback pairing?
Yeah, but we've got Clark as one of the fastest people after they released those stats yesterday. So there's a positive. I don't know what speed Philbin was running either, but it must have been quite fast.
Oh dear. All right. Well, come on, let's have a man of the match from you, lads. I'm going to go for Philbin just because he seems to be our best forward at the moment. I did think Akawala played all right for his 2.5 minutes, but, you know, apart from that, I think Philbin was the best. Sam?
Yeah, go on. I'll go with you. Just because we've given it to Clark so often, we'll give it to Philbin this week.
Yeah. I concur. I think, yeah, let's do that.
Very good.
So we've had the positives are Philbin and Clark. We won the second half.
Yes, we won the second half.
I'm just thinking, well, okay, let's talk about a bit about Blake Austin and everything. And one thing I picked up on is that they were interviewing him last night and they were saying, you know, oh, when are you going to be fit? And I think the whole media has been asking it all week. And I'm not happy about this because it's almost, well, is it his decision whether he plays or not? Because if it was to do like a mathematical calculation and work out that, you know, if he's back 100%, then yes, obviously he should play. But there's a tendency to play people who are not 100%. So if we had that as an X, it'd be 100 minus X. And if you plotted it on a logarithmic, not a logarithmic scale, but on a curve and worked out the differentiation, is it really worth playing Austin to make sure that, hang on a minute, I thought we were doing Open University maths. You started us off last week. I've been doing my bloody research here. Anyway,
Carol Vorderman's back.
The point I'm trying to make is that do you play him when he's not 100% fit, risking the back end of the season, you know, for a Challenge Cup final? Or do you just sort of, you know?
Well, Dennis, as we all know, What Would Brian Bevan podcast is renowned for its undercover journalism. It turns out Louis Theroux and Stacey Dooley weren't available this week. So Panorama sent me to the Balearics in search of a character that may just hold the key to lifting the cup for the Wolves come Saturday afternoon.
I bet you loved the Balearics, didn't you?
Will he or won't he? That's been the question now for a few weeks. Tonight on Panorama, we go in search of the truth as we track down Blake Austin's left ankle.
Preview. Your attention, please. Please do not smoke in the terminal building. Smoking is only permitted in the specified smoking areas. Thank you. Preview.
Ah, so after a long flight, I've arrived here in sunny Mallorca. We understand from the Warrington Club, in order to help with rest and recuperation, Blake Austin's left ankle has made his way here to the island. Of course, Mallorca, one of Spain's Balearic Islands in the Mediterranean, it's a gorgeous day. It's known for its beach resorts, its sheltered coves. Can see the Mediterranean there twinkling away. Limestone mountains off to my right, and Roman remains, and a stunning, stunning 13th century Santa Maria Cathedral. Not forgetting, it's up now for its 2-Michelin-star restaurant, Zaranda, headed there by Chef Fernando Arellano, using inspiration from local food with an impeccable fusion of flavour, aroma and texture. And it's no doubt it'll be one of these places filled with a cacophony of history and culture that we'll find Blake Austin's left ankle making his way there now, probably as we speak. I'll make my way across the road to this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful little Spanish village to see if anyone's seen Blake Austin's left ankle. I'm greeted by a couple of wonderful young flamenco dancers there practicing their dance. You can probably hear the song from a young Balearic singer, because that's known as Cante Flamenco. That's Cante, spelled K-A-N-T-E. Got to be careful how you pronounce that one. I'll ask this elderly, leathery skinned Spanish bloke by the side of a tapas bar whilst he mends his fishing nets and plays dominoes. Nothing lazy or stereotypical about my writing there. Excuse me, senor, have you seen Blake Austin's left ankle?
Si, hombre, go grabo.
Ah, excellent. Can you tell me where he is, por favor? Possibly up at the Limestone Mountains?
No.
Oh, then he must be visiting the Santa Maria Cathedral, see?
No.
Zaranda, then? The Michelin-starred restaurant? Obviously trying the Mallorcan oysters with caviar, horseradish and black truffle.
No, he's in Varna, at a strip joint.
Really? Well, I've made my way into the bright lights of Parma. I find it hard to believe I'll find Blake Austin's left ankle here. Ahead of me there's strip joints. I'll head over to this one. It's got a rusty old half neon sign missing. I'll try and read what it says. It reads Patterns on Parma. Anyway, it seems to be shut. There's a note pinned to the nightclub door. Relocating to Swinton, UK. Opening 2020. Interesting. Oh, hang on. There seems to be a strip club on the other side of the road that's getting a lot of attention. I'll try and make my way there, not get run over by any of these mopeds. There's an enormous pair of flashing breasts all lit up. There's a sign underneath. It reads, Bianico Tetas. Of course, that translates to, let me have a look. Oh, Bionic Tits. There's a couple of bouncers on the door looking distinctly like Alan Rathbone and Carl Webb. I wondered where they got to. Anyway, purely for the purposes of What Would Brian Bevan Say podcast, I'll reluctantly make my way inside.
Hey, Morgan, you're touching the dancers!
Goodness, it's a good job Dennis Way were listening here. His tackle bags would be overheating.
Lazy boy like Mr.
Sankey? No, thank you, young man. And how does he know Sam? All a bit bizarre. Anyway, there seems to be an ankle in the corner there. Oh, Jesus. It's Austin's left ankle.
Hey, London, what the fuck are you doing here? Come and get yourself a nice big pair of Bionico Tetas.
What are you doing here, Blake Austin's left ankle? We've got the Challenge Cup next weekend.
Ah, fuck the Challenge Cup. Fuck the fucking Super League.
Come on, let's get out of here. You're letting the team down.
Ah, Street, you gotta be fucking joking. Have you seen those ankles? I've got to play alongside.
Look, I know Patton's ankle might be our Achilles heel. Oh, come on. Took me all day to think of that one. Without you, Mr. Blake Austin's left ankle, we've got no hope.
Yeah, fucking dance for me, baby. Such big tetters on a small pair of legs.
Oh, for Christ's sake. What's Ben Moon at Masilla doing in here?
Want some of this?
Right, that's it, Blake Austin's left ankle. You're coming with me.
You haven't even got your brace on. Come on, you're on your way.
Hey, get off me, Landon. Alan, Carl, get this chancer to the door. He's got backless chance.
Get off me. You can't treat me like that. I was born south of the river, you know. I've got friends that studied law. I'll be back. Just you wait, Spanish. Wait till I finish my crown green game of bowls.
Well, I got a tan, boys. I mean, I wasn't there long, but it was, you know, it was good. I thought I enjoyed it. I mean, I think you've summed it up there, Dennis. Without his left ankle, we're going to be fucked.
No, well, you know, the thing is, what I'm trying to say is, I don't think it's his decision. I think you'd look at it and think, well, if he's 50-50 now with a week to go, he isn't going to be 100% fit. I wouldn't risk it. I'd focus on doing the rest of the season.
All right, Sam, if Austin doesn't play on Saturday, who are the halfbacks?
Well, in particular, now that Ratchford could be a bit iffy, although I've not heard anything this morning about Ratchford, it's going to have to be Deck Pattern and Levette, maybe?
You said that with a bit of confidence, didn't you?
God, okay. We're in trouble. Okay. We are in trouble.
All right. So can I ask a question then, right? So Austin's been out now for quite a few weeks, right? So working on the assumption that they must have thought, okay, he may not play at Wembley.
Yeah.
Do you think it might have been a good idea to possibly trial our two halfbacks that are going to turn out at Wembley together in the halves?
Agree 100%. Yeah.
Or pick one that wouldn't be cup tied.
Yeah. So rather than move Mamo to fullback for the Wigan game and say, right, Stefan, you're going into number six because that's where you're playing next week. Might just be, you know, an idea possibly to just have a little bit of a go there before we turn up at London. We haven't done any of that. So
does that mean does that mean you think Austin is actually a definite to play?
I think he will play, but it seems bizarre if he doesn't play. I'll be absolutely furious to think that we haven't played with our halfback, you know, going into Wembley. Just saying. Yeah. Just saying. Anyway, we won the second half, lads. Come on, we won the second half. Yes.
I thought it's worth a mention that Patton, he played as though he was playing for his place next week. But now Sam's just given me that other option. I'm good beginning point. To think maybe not. But he did. Yeah, you can. Go on.
Just while I remember, I've looked the weather forecast up for next Saturday and it's going to be a glorious 27 or 28 degrees in London. Which brings me on to the point that I would put all my Pacific Islanders in the team because, boy, do they run for 80 minutes when it's warm. I'd have Tarzi in there. I'd have Murda Masilla in there. I'd have Akawala. I'm not being funny here, boys. Pasty Poms fade away after 60 minutes. You saw it in the Tonga versus England game earlier this year. I would have every single Pacific Islander out there if it's 27 or 28 degrees. It'll make a big difference. Just put it out there. Now, with the sport of British Rugby League at a knife edge, as it desperately tries to secure a sponsor for its forthcoming future, surely there's only one man to turn to. Yes, it's Ralph Rimmer, as he continues his search for the RL Holy Grail and Madam Boyd's balls. This week, Ralph drove his van, not al fresco, to Tesco, but using his entrepreneurial skills to the home of the Dragons. No, not that one. To seek an investor. What could possibly go wrong?
Into the den is Sussex-based serial inventor Stephen Ransom.
Sorry, Ewan, it's Ralph Rimmer from Yorkshire.
Confident they'll have profit in loss, and there will be no bullshit.
Hello, Dragons. My name is Ralph Rimmer, and my proposal is for a new patent concept of rugby league, Champagne Super League. I value the company at £4 million and would like a lot of your investment.
So £4 million?
Yes.
So I'm assuming a valuation of £4 million must have some sales?
Not yet. but I have met many TV executives who said that they would put it in their places.
You put it into places? How many?
Well, none as yet.
A trial product with zero turnover and a valuation based on future potential can be a lethal cocktail in the den. Is a hangover already setting in for Peter Jones?
I'm okay with people investing in a business where it's pre-revenue.
Yes.
I understand that model.
Well, I love you, Peter.
How much money have you raised for this business?
About $2 million.
What? You've spent $2 million.
Well, yes, it's hard to manage.
Where did you get that $2 million from?
Robert Elston.
And he said, I really like the idea.
Yes.
And his company has invested £2 million.
Yes, but he's got lots of money. He doesn't really care.
And how much of that £2 million is still with the business?
Well, I have spent it all, Peter.
So you've spent the £2
million? Yes, Peter.
Who owns the company?
Well, he owns 90% and I own 10%.
Oh, OK. And is he here waiting to come in?
I'm afraid not, Peter.
Why?
He's on holiday on his yacht.
You should have brought your main investor here. You've got a 90% shareholder that's not here, and that's a big thing.
I need a drink.
Oh, don't be like that, Jenny, love.
He owns just 10% of a company that's already soaked up some serious cash is a sobering revelation. Now, Tej Lalvani, chief executive of a multinational brand, wants to know who's the boss.
Who's going to run this business?
That'll be me, Tej.
Seriously?
Oh, yes. I've got some very good tips off my good friend Carl Fitzpatrick. Have you ever heard of the orchestra pit bubble?
Sorry, have you had experience running a business?
Yes, I was the security guard and property manager at the Gal Farm Stadium in Huddersfield for many years.
Property portfolio, managing tenants.
Yes.
That's a very different thing to launching a new product. You have no orders. You're not facing reality.
Oh, but I am. I have loads of initiatives. I just don't know where they are at the moment.
Do you really believe that you're going to get an investment today?
Not really, but it's the taking part that counts. What about you, Jenny? You're a lovely lady. Could you not see us selling the TV rights all around the world? Champagne Super League. Me and you together.
But this is absolutely crazy. I think the bubbles have gone to a lot of people's heads. And for that reason, I'm going to say I'm out.
Oh, bloody hell, Jenny.
Jenny Campbell bursts by failing to finance a deal. Has the air gone out of an investment for the other dragons?
Hi, Deborah. You're a lovely lady also.
But you haven't even got the patent yet, have you?
I think so.
Oh, you've got the patent. I thought you were in process.
Well, I've got Declan patent.
No, applied for. Have you got the patent? Is it granted?
Well, I only have a Declan patent.
So this does not have a patent on it?
Well, it's sort of.
I do not understand.
Don't be like that, Deborah.
How you think you can value this at £4 million?
Why not?
And you don't have a patent. I'm never going to invest at anything close to that valuation. So,
that's unfair.
I'm out.
Oh, bloody hell, Deborah.
A patently unimpressed Deborah Meaden dismisses a deal. And Tuka Suleiman looks to have made up his mind.
Hello again, Tuka.
All I can tell you
is
the fizz has gone out of this one.
Oh.
I'm not going to invest.
Oh, no.
I wish you all the best.
Oh, dear.
And I'm out.
Oh, Tuka, we could have played Tuka Pass together.
You can't run a company.
I can't.
If 90% is owned by someone else who's not here.
I could come back with Robert next week.
I actually think you're wasting everyone's time.
Yes, I hear that quite a lot.
So I'm out.
Oh, no. Bloody hell. Thank you very much for your time, dragons. You bunch of bastards. I don't know where I went wrong, Evan.
Bullshit. But it's a popular topic.
It is.
And there will be no bullshit in the world of economic theory.
Such a shame. By the way, Evan, have you seen Madame Boyd's balls?
Dennis, what did you make of that? Did he come up in the lift or up the stairs? He didn't come up the stairs, did he? He'd been wheezing if he came up those stairs. I always thought the show was better when they had to come up the stairs.
Yeah, it probably. I don't know. Why do you think it was better when he came up the stairs?
Well, they were more nervous. They were out of breath, weren't they? They were a bit...
Oh, I see. Bit of a sweat on the brow.
Yeah, yeah. Where's the lift now?
He's probably pushed in. He's probably helped up there. They've got quite a few directors at the RFL, haven't they? Just I don't know what they do. There was one I heard the other day, a title for on the pitch director. Don't know what he does. So, don't know. But yeah, I think Ralph's struggling a bit. Other things going on in the RAL. RAL? Who's the RAL? RFL. The one good thing did come out of the RFL. The only one good thing this year, I mentioned it to you, Rob, about having a reserve grade. I think that's the only good thing actually done.
No, so. I agree with that. It is. I mean, the fact they'll have no money next year whatsoever, Sam, will be interesting. But we've got a reserve grade. And we won the second half.
The other thing, we're talking about money. I mean, let's talk about Kevin Brown. He was on Sky last night and he said the reason was, or he did confirm from his perspective, that it was a salary cap issue. So that was the reason for letting him go. But he said he would be fit for Wembley. So it was a bit, I think he was trying to say that the decision was made within a 48-hour period and, you know, he couldn't get a 100% positive about his fitness before they signed Smith.
All right. Well, we'll sort of come on to that in a second because we've had a lot of tweets and emails in this week about that and just a sort of bizarre reasoning behind Matty Smith. We did run a poll this week, which was recently we've seen Warrington loan in Matty Smith and loan out Kevin Brown. There was four options: correct decision, what was the point, rather strange and utterly ridiculous. Rather a strange one with 49%. But as you've said, Dennis, it seems to be the fact that it was all to do with money. Do you think, Sam, that we've signed a few players a little bit early this year? There's still a fair bit of time to run. And we've been, you know, Mamo's got a new contract. Akawala's got a new contract. This is the reason, I presume, why they didn't have enough money for Brown, was it?
Well, no, those new contracts start next year. And of course, you had a transfer deadline day. That's a very Premier League thing. But last Friday, about two Fridays ago. So yeah, if anyone was going to play again this year, Smith had to be signed before them. I think that the Kevin Brown issue, as he said last night, was about proving his fitness. So do they go with Brown possibly being fit and coming back, or did they sign someone they knew was fit? Whether he's any good is another matter, but whether he's definitely fit in Matty Smith.
He's cup tied, Sam.
I know he is. That's just for one game. That's for one game.
Yeah, but it's not forward thinking, is it? Why sign a player that's obviously cup tied?
It's a stopgap, and it's a reflection of our lack of backup to our first team squad. We saw Riley Dean last week. He looks like he's got something about him, but the lad's 17 and he's only played one game. So
okay. All right. The other poll that we ran this week, which got a huge amount of votes, was what position will Warrington now finish in the league table? And we had second, third, fourth and fifth. There was a clear winner. 40% thinks we'll finish fourth. Looking at the table now, Hull play Salford. Well, they'll have played them by the time this podcast goes out. And then they'll be left. Hull need to play Huddersfield at home, Castleford away and Saints at home. So you'd possibly think they're going to get, what, 2 or 4 points there? Saints might not turn up last week of the season. Wigan have got to play Wakefield away, Catalans at home and Castleford at home. So they're going to get 4 points. And we've got Salford away 5 days after the cup final. Wakefield at home. Wakefield at home and Leeds away. So really, we're only going to get 32 points. So it is looking at the moment that we will finish fourth, which is a sad indictment how the season's gone.
It's an indictment to the last 6 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a particular issue of the last 6 weeks.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Because we've been so far ahead in the first half of the season, it was obviously quite positive, and then it's been such a dramatic change and a fall off.
Yes.
It feels a lot worse. And I think, you know, you see a lot of negativity, and I know you'll come on to some of the comments, Rob, but it seems to be a lot of comments. Very negative. And I think it's because it just feels really bad. It's not like a case of being inconsistent or anything. It's like a real drop.
All right. Well, I'll run the comments off. S. Worrell, 36628. He says, we unfortunately look like a shot team. I'm going to Wembley, but got to be honest, going for the occasion, as I don't think we have a hope in hell. Grand final is literally a dream. Ah, well, there's always next year. An email from Amanda. Really enjoyed cutting your hair last week whilst hubby was away. I'm sure we're only on the fringe of things to come. Wink, wink. Anyone know what that was about? I think that was just spam, Sam. Fletcher Ender, serious questions have to be asked about this season. Cheshian, going to be a tough finish, top five, unless we regain some momentum. Injuries, suspensions and penalties causing havoc. Come on the wire. We need to win three of the last four. No chance of that. Argallon 1950. This is a bizarre one. Buy one good one on 2 million per annum, even if you have to sack 10. Dennis, do you like that kind of managerial thinking?
Yes, I like that. Who would they be referring to?
I don't know. But to sack 10, we probably could get rid of 10 and just bring
well,
one.
Well, I see Loose Wire has got a bit vocal about that. I think he put out a list today saying get rid of about 8 of the players. So he's quite...
Come on to Loose Wire in a bit. We had a letter from Rusty Starfish. He says, never mind bionics. I was taught the old-fashioned way on a 1980s ticker tape DOS-based milling machine in the days when an apprenticeship meant something in Warrington. I've seen the decline in British manufacturing. If you bring in bionics, it'll be the same story as DOS, inferior players put together in China. I think he's getting at your bionics there, Dennis, of last week's tackleback.
Yeah.
Connor WWRL, why should we bother going if the players cannot be bothered to turn up? We work hard for our money and spend it on our club that we love just to watch a load of crap. There's definitely something going on behind the closed doors, but I don't know what it is. Us fans deserve better. Sam, anything going on behind closed doors, do you think?
No. We're just waiting for Gareth Widdop, and that's the problem. We're waiting for all our eggs are in the Gareth Widdop basket for next year.
Okay. Is that a sequel to Waiting for Godot?
I've got his number. Do you want me to text him and see?
I used to live down the same street.
I'll finish with these two because I think these two perfectly sum it up. One was from Chris Rustage. She says, two finals last year masked what was predominantly a toothless wire team that was boring to watch, a grinding five drives and a kick team. We bottled both finals. This year is displaying the same trend. We're going backwards rapidly, and it appears Price doesn't know how to rectify it. Are we questioning Price a little bit now? He's up there grinning in his box. He's still all happy and thinks everything's cushy, but it's not looking that good for him at the moment.
I've got a similar sort of response on Facebook. And I've seen the first crack where someone's asking for Price's head. I think it's all very negative very quickly, but let's focus. I think there's a few things to focus on. And when you look at some of the comments coming back, it's about, as you've already mentioned, five drives and a kick, no offensive sort of, anything to sort of look at any positives on the offense. And when you look at the, points scored, as I've mentioned, 11 a week, it's not really a grand figure that will win you most games. So I suppose when you take the emphasis off the players, then you do start looking towards Price. And, this is his first real test, I suppose, with bad form for a club that he's been managing for over a season. So there's no excuses. So it's interesting that starts to pop up. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, I think I touched on it a bit earlier. And I think you're on there on with it as well. We're playing relatively conservative rugby, five drives and a kick. That's relying on keeping hold of the bloody ball, and we don't keep hold of the ball. Mm-hmm. We keep hold of it, we control it well. If we complete at 85 to 90%, then we're down the opposition's end. They start making mistakes, we'll feed on it, we'll score more tries. But if we're just playing conservative one-out rugby and drop the ball in our own half, that's where we're struggling at the minute.
Yeah. Well, Phil Rhodes is another one, and Mark Gilkes, who've also sort of tweeted in and pretty much saying what you've also said, Sam. Dan Lewis has also tweeted in to say, whoever decides on our recruitment and contract extensions needs to be held accountable. Mamo new contract after just a few games. Sitter does ridiculously low minutes and gets 2 years. Price looked clueless tonight, and I'm struggling to see where our next win will come from. Well, we won the second half, boys, so we're certainly on the up. We're on the up. Now we'll move on to another section. Yeah, sorry, Dennis, carry on.
I'm just going to say, I was having a look at me notes this morning, because it's unusual to be doing the podcast at this time. I'm pumped full of coffee, and I decided to have a look at all my notes. And looking at the actual sort of minute by minute on the earlier games in the season, it's surprising, actually, how many times Ratchford pops up, Atkins, and a lot of the tries scored by the wingers as well. And quite clearly, there was a lot of, you know, passing going on and everything, but quite clearly, Austin was involved with everything. And it's almost as if the team has become so reliant on Austin. Without him, it's just basically a kick to the corner. There's no one directing in the middle.
Well, you've got Austin, haven't you? You've got Ratchford who can chime into the line. We've got a kick up in the air that works about 1 in 20. And we've got Clark who can run from dummy half. And that is it. There's nothing else whatsoever.
Okay. One more thing. Sorry, yes, you're not going on yet. No. You've been very kind to me tonight. Today. Tonight, your time.
You look nice, Dennis.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. That's ever since we did Fletcher and the other guy. I forgot his name already. The other thing Halliwell I was going to mention is, talking about Halliwell Mounds, what the fucking hell are they moving the match for? I was all planning to come up and watch that match on Sunday. They were in Salford. They bloody moved it to Thursday. What the bloody hell's going on there? Is this because of Sky?
Yeah, so like, well, you know, now they're subservient to Sky, aren't they? Because Sky gives them all the money, you see. So it's the way it is.
It's not right, though, is it? Neither St Helens nor Warrington should be playing Thursday night football when they're the only two teams playing at Wembley.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm doing now? I'm going to see Blackpool Illuminations.
Mm, nice. Is there a theme? Who's turning it on? Red Rum?
I think Depp Patton's turning it on.
Does he have to use two hands?
Might take a week to put on.
Oh dear. Right, new section on the podcast. Everyone listening, we're going to start a new section, very similar to Swap Shop. It's called What Would Brian Bevan Swap? We've had our first two come in. We've had one from Craven Moorhead. He phoned in to say he would like to swap a Tim Can Alley set in perfect working order for either an Evel Knievel stunt figure or a signed poster of Eddie Kidd. So if anyone out there who's got that, we'll see what we can do. And Mrs. Alison Smith has faxed in. She said she'd like to swap her husband, Reg. He's 58, overweight, bald, with a flatulence issue, and does nothing but sit in his armchair all day shouting bigoted, racist and sexist remarks at the telly during Victoria Derbyshire. He also never misses a Warrington game on Sky. She's after swapping Reg for a man 20 years younger, preferably from south of the river with a positive attitude. She goes on to say an intimate relationship is not a necessity, as she's been putting up with Reg's limp 4 inches for 30 years. However, a good sense of humour is a must.
That sounds like you, that, Rob.
Warrington kick off right to left against Featherstone Rovers in the Rugby League Challenge Cup final at Wembley. And from the first whistle, which should surely have been a bell, this replay of the Wars of the Roses is no battle of flowers. Penalty to Featherstone taken by Box for a late tackle by Murphy in the second minute of play. 2-0 for Yorkshire. A scrum, and the ball is gathered by Nash. Out to Bell, but he's brought down. Then retribution strikes Murphy, and he's out for the count. Whitehead takes the penalty kick, and it's 2-2. On with the fight. Warrington attack with force. That's Philbin down under. And referee Shepherd finds it hard to keep track of the running battle. Another penalty for Warrington. Two penalty goals for Warrington, one for Featherstone. In fact, it's a blood match, just as it was in days of yore. And one penalty after another, mainly on charges of assault and battery. Penalty for Featherstone, 4-4. From the halfway line, penalty for Warrington, 6-4. He never misses. And again, low but sure, 8-4. The ball to Chisnell. Then Newlove charges for the line and he's over for the first try of the match. And the score at half-time is Featherstone 9, Warrington 8, after Box converted. Second half, and the game opens out. Noonan forces his way almost to the line. Ashcroft picks up the ball and throws himself over for a try. After conversion, Warrington ahead 13-9. Then, after two penalties by Whitehead, Murphy kicks a drop goal. And another drop goal by Murphy, still game despite injuries, 21-9. Time for one more try, and Nicholas barges over the line to make the final score 24-9. Warrington's captain, Murphy, receives the cup from the High Commissioner of Australia. But it was Whitehead, who hardly struck a blow in anger, who won the Player of the Match award. A hard game, but that's what finals are all about.
OK, Callum's back.
Warriors to Wembley, it's what it's all about, as the Primrose and Blue Army take their troops down to the capital for back-to-back cup finals. With the form poor recently, we've seen Hull and Wigan chase our boys down. There isn't too much belief from some, although there's still hope and expectation. A rampant St Helens have been setting the benchmark yet again this season, but is it time for them to lose a game at the right time for the Wire? With virtually a full-strength squad, still a few out, a fresh face in Matty Smith, Warrington will be looking fairly strong, and just like the semi-final in Bolton, absolutely anything can happen. Three times already, falling victim to Saints this season. Is it going to be four-time lucky, and not three? What better way will it be than to win it on the biggest stage? A day for one and all to look forward to. Most fans go in with high expectation. Some already think the trophy's going back to the totally wicked stadium. Not on the Wolves' watch. Let's get this one, Warrington.
Well, Callum getting confused there that Matty Smith could play at Wembley. Callum, up your game. We may have a player. We may have player injuries and loan deals coming out of our ears, as there doesn't seem a day goes by at Wire without some form of upheaval. So amongst all this higgledy-piggledy, topsy-turvy nonsense, it's always good to turn to a steady cart horse. Yes, we can always rely on the podcast's very own anchor. I said anchor. It's Dennis's Tackle Bags.
Tackle Bags.
I see ya. My intro started to deteriorate again. I was having all that, you know, nice referencing for the past couple of weeks, starting to deteriorate. Well, I always, I'm a steady cart horse.
I'll tell you what I'll do. Every time Warrington win, from now on, I'll give you a positive intro. And every time they lose,
shit,
we'll let it slide. Good luck for the end of this year.
God. Last week, we delved into the world of bionics, looking into the future of enhancing human performance through the introduction of technology and the human body. I identified implants, muscles, and tendons with stronger synthetic materials, along with a bionic eye to identify wind conditions and the flight of the ball when placing a kick. So we had a few good responses. $6 Million Man fans out there. So the responses were bionic. 72% said yes. Had something from Aussie Bob. Great idea, although it might take more than $6 million for a rebuild of our halfback crisis. We've got a crisis. Mm-hmm.
It's true.
I don't know if it's $6 million Aussie dollars, but we've probably already paid that much for our halfbacks anyway. No, 27%. So this is from Horse's Mouth. Utterly ridiculous. Where does it all end? Next, it will be sex with robots. One for you there.
What do you mean next?
Oh, right. You already you are nearer to China. I suppose they sell everything from there. And then other Dobby, 1%. Are you all impotent or three bionic dicks? So you've all been implicated in Tackle Bags this week. Welcome to my world of abuse on the internet.
Thank you.
How do you
much.
Feel? Yeah. Okay.
Nice to be included.
Yeah. Do you want a bionic dick?
I went into work the other day smelling a WD-40.
You have a damp crotch as well. Right. So in recent weeks, we've seen the transfer window closing and the imposing deadline causing a last-minute scramble by the clubs to buy and sell or exchange players. So this week, we have invented an app. It's called Strife Swap. This is a top Trump portal of all rugby league players in all the leagues, and they are rated in such a way that teams can use the app to exchange players. So the benefits of the app are that the data relating to the player statistics can be instantaneously compared, and the app will make suggestions on potential player swaps. So this also negates the need for player agents, allowing the clubs to communicate and negotiate directly. So an up-to-date way of, exchanging players. So what I thought was is that we'll make it like top trumps, so we can actually think of the criteria. I've got some the usual criteria: ability, speed, age, kicking, tackling, X factor as well, maybe. Any other suggestions from you two about what you could put on there?
How many shirts with his name on the back would they sell? Marketability.
Guns, how many knots you can do. I only had the one. I had the battleship one. It's the only one I had. Aircraft carrier used to be everything. Top trumps. Aircraft carrier. There was always a shitty frigate that won nothing. It wasn't the lightest, wasn't the heaviest, didn't have the most guns.
Yeah.
Just probably like Jason Clarke. You're never going to win anything on top trumps with Jason Clarke, are you? I bet there's not one category. He'd be all right on everything, but, you know.
Don't those sort of cards usually win? Because, like, you know, the average, sort of just above the average or something
like
that.
You wouldn't beat Ben Murdoch Masilla on weight, would you? Hey?
No.
Every time. Hey?
Yeah. So are we comparing it to battleships then, are we?
I tell you, you'll be the frigate.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, if this is a good idea, then let me know. I've got a one-to-one meeting with Ralph Rimmer to discuss the idea with the RFL.
Oh, that'll finish you off the idea then.
Is it about time I mentioned we won the second half? We seem to be dropping a bit, lads.
So if you think that's a cracking idea, then write to us in our usual way, which is whatbevin@gmail.com or the Brian Bevin Facebook page. And anything else Rob London's been clicking on his internet this week. Thank you very much.
Just how on earth are Wire going to beat Saints on Saturday? Having lost to them three times in Super League so far this season with a combined scoreline of Warrington 34, Sintellins 89. Well, perhaps the tactical genius of Daniel from You've Got a Loose Wire has the answers.
Hello, it's Daniel from You've Got a Loose Wire, and this week on the podcast I've been given the unenviable task, you might say, of trying to devise some sort of plan for how we get a positive result in the final and beat St Helens at Wembley. I've just watched St Helens beat Leeds Rhinos, and it was quite a similar story actually to Saints' performance against us at the Halliwell Jones last week, where in the first half it was quite an even game. And then the second half, it just completely took control. But there were a few weaknesses that I noticed in Saints' game. One in particular for me was Theo Farge. So for me, if you stop Johnny Lomax, as I imagine Saints have tried to do with Blake Austin this season, have done quite successfully, then you're leaving only one halfback to be involved in the game if you can successfully stop Lomax. And Farge, for me, doesn't have anywhere near the creativity that Lomax does. So if you can try and limit Johnny Lomax's influence on the game, I think you go a long way to getting Saints, to getting Saints in trouble. Another thing which I noticed that Saints struggle with a little bit, and I thought they struggled with this a little bit against us as well, was off-the-cuff plays and just generally throwing the ball from side to side. If you think of the two tries that we scored in the first half against Saints, you know, they were both lovely balls out wide, cut out passes from Rashford, and they came from quick play, the balls, and not just one-man rugby going up the middle. And Leeds had similar success with that tonight, playing it wide to Hanley. Good play from the centre, Conrad Hurrell. So that's maybe something to consider. You know, not being boring, being a bit more expansive with our play and trying things, and sometimes they might come off. I think the thing when you're playing against Saints is you have to take your chances. You can't afford, because you're not going to get many chances against St Helens side as good as they are. So when you do get chances, you simply have to take them. You can't afford to be making mistakes. And the other thing you can't afford to be doing, which is definitely something for a side like Warrington who suffer from this so much, is penalties. You can't be giving needless penalties away. Their forwards are good enough to make metres on their own without us giving them metres from penalties. So I think that's something definitely to consider. And our forwards, our own forwards need need to have good games themselves, because we don't want to be losing the game in the forward pack as we have done before. Tonight they had there was a still image in the second half, and it was on the sidelines. There was Lachlan Coote, Tommy Makinson, Alex Walmsley as well, and James Roby. They were all missing, and so was Morgan Knowles, and yet they're still coming with a victory. They are an outstanding side, but you know, they've lost a few this season, so maybe, you never know, but we are going to need to be 100% on it from minute one. No mistakes, nothing going wrong, and maybe, who knows.
Some interesting points there, Sam. He thinks if you just basically take Lomax out of the game, they do struggle, Saints. Would you agree with him on that?
I've always rated Lomax. I like Lomax. I wish he was playing in our halves just at the minute. So, yeah, I don't know if he...
I wish anyone was playing in our halves at the moment, basically. I mean, I wish you were playing in our halves at the moment. So.
you and Dennis
in our halves couldn't do any worse.
Well, at least he'd know they wouldn't bother passing to us, so we wouldn't get in the way, because we'd be about 40 metres behind, wouldn't we?
Anyone over 12 stone, Sam sort of doesn't like anyone running at him at that weight, do you?
No. Oh, no, it's frightening for me.
Sorry, Sam, I interrupted. Carry on about Lomax.
I think you've just summed it up there perfectly. Anyone out of there. We need it.
Well, I've lost track. What are you going on about now?
In terms of Johnny Lomax, to be serious for a minute, yes, I do rate him. I rate him a lot, but it's not just him. I think we need to give the St. Helens team a bit of food poisoning on Friday night. That might help us out a little bit.
How many Pacific Islanders have they got in the St. Helens team? Because it's going to be 28 degrees on Saturday.
Yeah, I believe that's a theory that someone's come up with recently, isn't it? Maybe.
Watch this space. Okay.
I think earliest is shit anyway. Sorry, I just thought that out there.
Okay, fair enough. Your earliest memory of a cup final, Dennis, what was it, mate?
Well, I forgot you'd asked this question. and the fact that I've got a really shit memory, and I'd probably have to go back and have a look who was actually playing. And the only one I can remember is I was at university, and this fella who I was living with, a bit of a dodgy character, said he'd got some tickets. I thought they were free tickets for the Silk Cup Challenge Cup.
And, is this Fred the drug pusher?
No, it was another one. It's a different drug pusher. I lived in some classy places, Sam. Don't judge me. And anyway, he said, oh, I've got some tickets. My brother works at Silk Cut. I've got some tickets. I thought they were free. Turns out they weren't free. I think he was just getting like some money out of me to buy some drugs. Anyway, so I took a long train journey down there with some beers on the train. Got there. It was Castleford versus Wigan. Eventually got there, can't really remember, very blurry, right at the back, probably the worst place you could stand or sit. I don't even know if I was standing or sitting, because I'd drank that much. And I remember Martin Afire, I think, scored a very good try in that game, and I think he sort of scored it behind the post, i.e. the stanchion of the stand, and I couldn't see it. That's my earliest and only memory, really.
Oh, my God, why did we ask him, Sam? What?
I've just lost the will to live.
Come on. We can salvage this. We can always win the second half.
Your analogy there, Dennis, was a bit like our halfbacks, wasn't it? It just had that same feel about it. It was pathetic.
It's stuttering.
Sam, what's your earliest memory, mate, of a Challenge Cup?
Hull. Kingston Rovers versus Hull was my earliest memory. Sat at my granddad's watching that. And then I seem to remember Hull played quite a few finals. Or did they play the final next year against Widnes? And went to a replay. And that was it. And then of course, we had the Wigan dominance. And the first time I ever went to Wembley was when Warrington played against Wigan. And we got beat, unfortunately.
Okay,
36-14, 1990. I don't remember much of the game, actually. I remember Mike Gregory's try, and I remember staying behind to clap the team off, but that's about it. That's my memory.
Come on, Mr. London, as well. Go on.
My earliest memory isn't actually going to watching a cup final. My earliest memory is going to my grandma and granddad's, who live just off Padgate Lane by I think it was called, it was The Good Companions, and it became The Goodies, but I think it was actually called The Cemetery before The Good Companions. And Warrington were bringing the cup home in 1974. We'd beaten Featherstone. And I stood by the side of the road and they went past on an open-top bus. It's a bit blurry, though. I've got that memory. And then I've got this very vivid memory of the next day going to the Manchester Marathon and Jimmy Savile running past.
No, no, no. Move on.
Over and shaking my hand.
Oh, dear.
There could be some money in you. Actually, there could be some money in it for you, that.
I was about to say, I preferred the Castleford Wigan drink drug-fueled final, but... Now I've heard that he's been tainted by Jimmy Savile. Well, that's a new one.
Well, yeah. he was all right with me. Okay, come 3 p.m. on Saturday, it's the Challenge Cup final, Warrington versus St Helens. Now, I don't just want your prediction, lads. I want you to tell me how this is going to pan out. Right, who's starting? Come on, hands up. Who's going first? Sam, come on, Sam.
Right. It's going to start similar to all the St. Helens Warrington games this year. It's going to be intense. Yeah, it's going to be end to end, and we will match St. Helens for effort and energy in that first 20 minutes. But then I think our chances rely completely on us being almost error free. If we can complete at 90%, we have a chance, but I just get the feeling that as we get into the second half, we'll make some errors, and that last 30 minutes could be a bit of a horror show if you're a Warrington fan. And they might just start to pull away, similar to what they've done three times already.
Give us your score then.
Warrington 10, or 11 it should be. No, but Warrington 10, St Helens 34.
What about you, Rob?
Well, I think it's going to be warm on Saturday. I don't know if anyone's mentioned this. So I think it'll be closer than everyone thinks. I'm going to go for 18 all after extra time. Replay Widnes Wednesday night in front of 104,000. They break the record. And in years to come, people will say they couldn't get over Runcorn Bridge.
Where's your explanation? You've not even answered your own bloody question.
Just 18 all. 18 all. Saints will lead early on. Yeah. Saints will lead early on, and then after the 60th minute, our Polynesians are going to come into their own based on the fact that it's going to be warm. No one's going to kick a drop goal. We're going to Widnes Wednesday night, 104,000.
Where are 104,000 people going to go? We're going to play on Spike Island. Oh, dear.
Dennis?
Well... Yeah, to be honest, I think I agree with Sam. I think when you look at the way we've last played against St. Helens. Eh?
You're not agreeing with mine?
No. Funny enough, I didn't like the idea of Widnes as a venue. So if they picked somewhere else. No, I think it'll be pretty similar. I think it was like how Saints played against Leeds as well the other day. It was quite close to half time. And then I think in the second half, it'll just maybe get away from us. But I do, I have been listening to them. I don't know how the psychology works on this one. I don't know whether it's called delusional psychology, where they say it's a different competition and St. Helens are going to be, vulnerable and this, that, and the other. I don't think it's about St. Helens. I think it's about how we play. And, if we do see what we saw at the second half of the Wigan match and they continue that in, then one thing is that will keep us in the game. But have we got a way of winning the game? That's the question. And I think, if we can repeat that second half performance, we're then looking for something special. So where do you think?
God, you've had some coffee today, haven't you? Jesus, you're going on.
I know. Who's going to provide that inspiration next week?
Deck Patton. Come on, Deck Patton. Get in there, Deck.
The redemption of Deck. Yes, how about that? How about that for that for a story? It's 16-18. We're just behind and Deck Patton takes the line on, breaks a tackle.
Yeah,
Goes the length with Ben Curry on the outside of him.
But then he pops the ball up for Jake Mamo on the inside to go under the posts. With a minute left. Yeah, we can dream.
We shouldn't do these recordings, should we, at midday in England? It's obviously the sun's getting to you or something.
Riling. knows that time is ticking away as he dodges and weaves. Here comes the countdown. And there goes the hooter. And for a second year in succession, it is Warrington Arms that are raised aloft. For so long they waited for this trophy to be taken back to their town, but now they're making a habit of keeping a hold of it. Michael Monaghan last year was the Landstock Trophy winner. This year it's Breers. Hicks a hero with a hat-trick of tries. It's Warrington's story all over again. Primrose and blue painted across this Challenge Cup final.
Okay, all right. Well, the podcast is downloading in over 30 countries around the world now. So if you're heading to the match or you're listening or watching from afar, reach out to us and have your say at whatbevan@gmail.com or direct message us at Twitter @whatbevan. So from a man as modern as the Capital Stadium that glows to the height of a statistical arch no other rugby league correspondent has the knowledge to reach, it's a Wembley Way walk from Sam.
All the best.
And secondly, crumbling like the old Wembley. Yes, charming perhaps, but pissing where he stands, and with a couple of old twin-towered domes he's replicated on his own body as middle-aged saggy mantits. It's an abide from me, from Dennis.
The senior.
My name's Rob London. Enjoy the game, everyone. I'm off to rep my long-wave aerial. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
Well, there you go. We need some bionic dicks next week, won't we? Jesus.
I mentioned the one second.